Here to dive into industry trends with leading ETF experts, this is ETF Spotlight with Nina Mishra.
Hello and welcome to ETF Spotlight. I'm your host, Nina Mishra. My guest today is Tim Seymour, founder and CIO of Seymour Asset Management and co-host of CNBC's Fast Money. We're talking about cannabis investing and the Amplify Seymour Cannabis ETF, ticker symbol CNBS, which is managed by Tim. And it is, in fact, the best performing cannabis ETF over the past year. It is up more than 185%. Tim, welcome back on the show.
Great to be here, Nina. Thanks for your time today.
So cannabis stocks and ETFs are soaring this year. Your ETF, CNBS, has almost doubled in 2021. And I saw some companies like Sundial, they're up more than 200%. Right. Every year is up almost 200%. So tell us what is going on. Is it mainly the favorable policy outlook or an improving industry outlook or the recent Reddit frenzy, which is sending these stocks soaring?
I think it's a combination of fulfillment of the promise of the cannabis sector and the growth opportunity that people were appropriately focused on 3 years ago in cannabis 1.0. But that you've from the top down perspective, you've continued to see follow through on the state's legislation, first of all, where more states have come online. In the federal elections, you had five new states with ballot initiatives that night, including three pretty, if not very conservative states, including South Dakota and Montana and a place where there's some sense that what we've known also is that independent of politics, this is a bipartisan issue. You've had the development of New Jersey on election night ratified what had been largely expected to, build the adult market in New Jersey, which will really get going, really now and into the end of the year. And that ultimately then places like New York and comments from Andrew Cuomo is basically given a green light to the adult process. And in fact, New York's already come together with a budget that includes important revenues from the cannabis sector. So the prospect of the East Coast going full adult market and really becoming a major commercial center for cannabis is part of that story. The improvement on the bottom up, though, of companies that are both in the United States and in other parts of the world, certainly a handful of the Canadian companies have shown very strong operational improvement, is the other part of the story before we talk about federal. So top down on the state level, great. Bottom up on the operational side, and especially the U.S. multi-state operators, to be clear, offer some of the best growth in the sector. I think they're proving that even with the headwinds of a higher cost of capital, lack of real capital markets access, and any lack of institutional investor follow through, these are companies that are improving, becoming more profitable, and growing, in many cases, north of 30%. And I'd say that's pretty fair to say for the whole sector. On the federal side, and the reason I don't talk about it totally in a macro sense is because federal addresses kind of two issues that then are also very important to what's happened with the performance this year. Federal obviously means descheduling. It means ultimately to the extent that you're going to see cannabis companies be able to have access to traditional capital markets, to be able to list in the New York Stock Exchange for U.S. operators that have had to go to Canada to do it, and the NASDAQ, and then cost of capital falling because they can be supported by traditional debt programs and borrowing facilities, and access big institutional creditors who, obviously, we know outside the cannabis industry, the high yield market's never been more buoyant for issuers. I'm not going to tell you we're not all concerned about the credit risks out there in the world, but so that's a big deal. And the progress coming out of the Georgia runoff has sent a signal that with Democrats now in control of the Senate, any legislation that was going to change those dynamics, which was dead on arrival in 2020 and before, now has a high probability of passing if then combined with thoughtful approach to criminal justice, social equity issues, and you know, those are part of the very complex portfolio of issues for cannabis. What that also though means is that access to U.S. markets, not just for existing U.S. companies and the bettering of their capital markets dynamics, but also to some extent, it's meant the prospect that some of the biggest Canadian companies have an opportunity to access the U.S. markets and not challenge their U.S. listings and to be able to go full bore on the opportunity in the United States, in addition to what they're doing around the world, has made investing in some of those companies appear to be very interesting. And I don't think there's any mistaking that the valuations of U.S. companies are a lot more attractive. The United States is a much bigger market. And right now, if constrained to Canada, Canada's total addressable market is smaller than California, smaller than possibly Illinois. Well, let's just say that it's clearly a lot more interesting to talk about the prospect of U.S. investing for U.S. and multi-state operators. But investing in cannabis is complicated in that sometimes you need to follow the capital flows. And the argument that I make for running an active strategy in cannabis is that I'm here to marry fundamentals with where I think capital dynamics and some of the restrictions in the capital markets are things that I need to be very cognizant of. And in many cases, are part of the reasons why canopy growth is up 70% this year, even though some of the U.S. operators who have had arguably a different backdrop for re-rating are, if I look at the year-to-date numbers, let me just quickly bring up a chart. Year-to-date canopy growth is up 63%. Green Thumb up 45%. Cresco Labs up 59%. TerrAscend up 53%. Curaleaf up 40%. So these are great companies in the U.S. with high growth, and Canopy's outperformed. Why has Canopy outperformed? It's not just because someone in a Reddit chat room has said, go after these short squeeze companies and let's stick it to the hedge funds that are short these stocks. I think Aphria, which is a large position in our portfolio, is maybe the best operator in Canada, and is proving that they've been profitable, five straight quarters, and is well positioned with an operational platform that's proven to be profitable, but also they are building brands and they are seeking exposure through the U.S. Their merger with Tilray is something that I think is hopefully going to take the best of those Tilray assets, which I think includes JVs with Novartis and Anheuser-Busch and authentic brands and a presence in Europe, with the best operator in Canada and now brands in the U.S. and brands that may not be cannabis brands but maybe other brands. But Irwin Simon, who is the CEO for the last 12 to 15 months, is proven to be one of the best CEOs in building brands in the consumer product space over the last 5 years or 10 years, especially with the work he did at Hain Celestial. So, my argument has been, I want to own what's going to move higher. And the position for my fund is really as an active strategy. I'm here to invest in the stocks that are representative of the market today and where we think the market's going tomorrow. So, back to it's a long answer to your question, and I probably got into other topics here, but simply, the outperformance of cannabis in 2021 is really a combination of top down, bottom up, and technical factors relating to the capital markets restrictions for some companies and the prospect of it being even more wide open for other companies.
A lot of good stuff. So policy outlook's very favorable now with the blue sweep. And I wanted to talk a little bit more about Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer's recent statement, which has led to optimism around the possibility of federal legalization. So do you think investors should expect federal legalization anytime soon?
I think the expectation here is that you've had a sense that legislation will probably first address safe banking, potentially with some safe harbor for capital markets. Then possibly you would see the States Act and then get into something like the MORE Act. And again, remember, the MORE Act was passed in the House last year. And as mentioned, it was going to be dead on arrival in the Senate. But the important part about that was you essentially ended Schedule I status for cannabis for the first time in its history, at least in the House. So the bills are going to have new acronyms in 2021 with a new Congress, but the dynamics will be seeking the same thing. Will cannabis be descheduled fully in the Senate through a bill to be named something, in 2021? I don't think so. Is there an opportunity to have some type of an omnibus bill come through that has approval from both sides that begins to address some of the issues that will allow this industry, which is providing not just budgetary support for fiscal holes that sit in states around the country, but as provided such incredible job creation and such incredible opportunity for communities, especially minority communities. I think that's part of the story here. So I think being able to offer companies the ability to have proper banking and capital markets access, cost of capital that could come down, listing on the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ, I think is a dynamic that could be a second half of 2021. What that would mean for the industry is, a massive re-rating, because although we've seen a massive re-rating, the fact of the matter is institutional capital is still not invested in cannabis.
I was also interested in your thoughts on the recent Reddit frenzy. So last week, three of the top five most discussed companies on the Reddit's Wall Street Bets forum were cannabis companies. Yep. So retail investors, they poured a lot of money into these stocks, but that interest fizzled soon. And these companies don't have a lot of short interests, unlike GameStop and some other companies that were targeted by day traders earlier. So as a major institutional investor in this space, what are your thoughts on this Reddit interest in the cannabis space?
Well, I think the Reddit interest is a combination of an exercise in finding heavily shorted companies and seeing where there's a catalyst that could change that dynamic. But in some sense, what we know it to be with GameStop or AMC is that it's a frenzy that has zero fundamental foundation to it and is unsustainable. And so I think, where cannabis has come involved is there are companies like Tilray that were heavily shorted companies that have gone through painful evolution of a business model that really was never supposed to be valued where it was. Supposed to be, never really had the foundation to justify that valuation, but that they're, the trigger around the Georgia runoff, but also what I talked about earlier is that it still might be a big opportunity for Canadian operators to have more access to the U.S. along with their NASDAQ and New York Stock Exchange listings and their global businesses and some of their strategic partners with big global strategic companies. Now, that's the story. And there are companies like Sundial that we have a very small position in at this point. It's less than 50 basis points. And my reason I hadn't owned Sundial until January, since the early days of this fund launching in the summer of 2019, because the capital base, the balance sheet made no sense. A significant concern around dilutive equity offerings. And this is one of the reasons why I barely own Tilray. And a lot of the Canadian operators that I don't have to own. And so we started nibbling at a position in Sundial in January because really a fundamental turn, and a sense that through restructuring and actually a balance sheet that was now, at least we had some vision for the 6 to 9 months, and with then the backdrop of increased interest in the sector, that this was, what I would call a tactical holding, that we began to add and build to a couple hundred basis point position from nothing. As we got into the frenzy of Reddit last week, and Sundial was one of those names that was posted on the boards, I actually was selling into that, and ultimately now have a position of less than 50 basis points again in Sundial, because I think it's somewhat representative of some optionality and a toehold, but it's not a company that I have a lot of long-term, fundamental belief in. And there's a case where the Reddit dynamic is something that, it was actually a gift. and unfortunately, an active ETF is not an active hedge fund, and there's some limits to how quickly we're going to trade. And I'm not trying to trade my portfolio every day. Investors need to understand that I'm taking a long-term view on the sector and trying to provide thematic exposure, but while being active and being nimble and being able to see conditions that become overbought and oversold sometimes very quickly. And that's what we've had in cannabis in the last few weeks. But I think Reddit is just a very small part of this story.
Right. So we have seen that these stocks are usually very volatile. Last week was very unusual. So Tilray started last week at about $25, then surged to $67 and was back to $29 by Friday close. Sundial, which you talked about a little bit, and Aphria, they were also on a roller coaster ride. So was last week's volatility mainly due to Reddit frenzy? Looking at the longer term, these stocks had done very well in 2017, then they had a terrible performance for 2 years. So what is your advice to investors who are concerned about extreme volatility in some of these stocks?
It's important to know that cannabis has actually been somewhat non-correlated as an asset class in 2020, even though global markets have gone higher as well. But I think cannabis, because of the fundamentals being very strong overall, can remain non-correlated. It's important to note, though, that this is a high-risk sector, and volatility is going to always run, I would expect, 2 to 3 times the volatility prevailing in more mature markets for, I won't call out past this year, but let's just say, as I look out to the next 12 months, I think cannabis will continue to be volatile. I think investors need to focus on fundamentals. Investors need to focus on companies that, and I think they should focus on the following. They should first be investing in companies that have balance sheets that they can have confidence are sustainable and are able to be both resilient through a downturn, but also opportunistic during a period where the industry is growing. And some of the best companies are the ones that are going to be able to consolidate the sector. They should be focused on companies that are well run and run by C-suite that has experience operating complex logistics, ERP, distribution, in addition to cultivation, and ultimately, in many cases and in most cases, because every company, even depending on what part of the chain they're in, effectively is developing a brand. But this is this is quickly going to become a very sophisticated consumer products industry. It's not there yet, even though I think you know the blueprint for it are there, and that's why companies like Canopy Growth, I think, are going to be very successful here because of their parent in Constellation Brands and their background. So I think investors need to understand who the leadership of the companies are and understand the strength of the company's balance sheets. They obviously want to be looking at growth and they want to be looking at profitability. But I think if you look at how investors invest in other high growth industries, it's not as if Netflix was making money for the first 5 years that they were in business, and yet the market cap grew and grew. Needless to say, Tesla or DraftKings, these are companies that are investors really investing in them because they're the most profitable companies right now? No, they're investing in growth. They're investing in concept. They're investing in, are they well run? And where are they positioned within their industry? And I think a lot of those precepts count here. Like investors, if they're investing in an ETF, I think you need to understand the approach of the ETF. Is it investing in the cannabis sector? Is it, are 80% of the companies in the portfolio, is 80% of the exposure in the portfolio companies that get at least 50% of their exposure from the cannabis industry and are not just tobacco companies who might, or pharma companies who might, or agriculture companies who might? And I think it's about understanding where active can really mean avoiding bad corporate governance, or not waiting for a quarterly end rebalancing period to fade an extraordinary move in a highly volatile up or down dynamic.
So yeah, this is definitely a very volatile sector, but there is so much growth potential. So an ETF approach of owning a diversified basket of stocks, and that is, and then active management also makes a lot of sense. So that takes us to your ETF, CNBS, which I mentioned has done very well. So how do you select stocks for this ETF? Do you look at the valuations or fundamental outlook or technicals? And also talk a little bit about some of your favorite cannabis companies, which I guess are the top holdings in your ETF.
Sure. Stock selection is a function of fundamentals and technicals and also some sense of capital flows. I am, as mentioned, investing in companies that I think are well-positioned from a balance sheet perspective to also be able to grow during this period. I'm investing in companies that I think have the prospect of being or are currently very profitable in the space. And I'm investing in companies ultimately, though, that are growing and are able to sustain this high growth. So, some of the best growth in the portfolio has been coming from companies like Grow Generation, which is, effectively a hydroponics play, but very much a B2B, B2C play in specialty retail, where through both organic and then through acquisition has been growing, well north of 50%. Hydrofarm is another play there. The story around a big name in the portfolio is a SPAC that we've owned for some time, which ultimately did a deal around Weed Maps. So the ticker is SSPK for Silver Spike, and it's a SPAC run by, again, I think a very talented group of sophisticated investors who know how to invest in new asset classes and emerging markets. Guys that actually I know from my emerging market days, but they've made an investment in a company that effectively runs the business called Weed Maps, which to me is again kind of a tech play and a play on distribution, delivery, and in some sense some of the same factors that are pushing investors into stories like DoorDash or Grubhub or so it's to me representative of where cannabis from a DTC perspective and from a technology perspective is going to be just as sophisticated and just as segmented as any other consumer product out there. And so it's a story that's very exciting for me, where I think the growth is really, you know, the target here. I mentioned Canopy Growth. I just simply say that I think the company, through the exposure that they do have when the U.S. becomes federally illegal, through a couple transactions that give them convertible shares, but also the balance sheet. And then frankly, they're already building brands in the United States. And I expect that the continued endorsement and the exercising of, you know, of warrants that will give the company even more capital from Constellation Brands is a big part of that story. And so I'm going to continue to be very excited there. You know, we had GW Pharma, which was the second largest position in our portfolio until the acquisition bid came from Jazz Pharmaceuticals. It remains at the top of the balance sheet because although that deal re-rated the company very quickly, we're still very, very bullish on the prospect there. And until this deal closes, you know, there's potential there could be a higher bid. There's potential that other parts of the patent portfolio could re-rate a bit. So again, the approach towards pharma, biopharma, in this particular case, cannabinoid science around neurology is why this deal was so important, and also sends a message that big strategics are coming and that there'll be more headlines like this for investors to follow that indicate very large multinational companies want to buy into this sector again.
Definitely very interesting area. So one last question I have is because many investors are now concerned that some of these stocks have gone up too much too yep. soon, and they think a lot of good news is already priced in. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that there's going to be volatility in the sector, but that buying cannabis thematically now is still very early. Remember, I think institutions are still largely not in the industry. I think investors in cannabis now are getting in ahead of big institutional follow through that will come when either the federal landscape allows them to, or when capital markets change a bit more. So I think that the growth in the sector is incredibly exciting. And while we've had some big moves, I think we're still very early in this trade. And this reminds me a little bit of emerging markets. I've probably mentioned this before, but I think there's various phases of evolution in a new asset class. And we're still in the phase where liquidity is still very much, I think, challenged, where you don't have access, access to the markets by all players, where there are a number of macro re-rating dynamics. And then, you know, ultimately the operational excellence of companies that we may not even know who they are yet is still a couple of years away. So we're pretty excited by the opportunity. Some days I wish we didn't have the I wish we could slow down the pace here, but that's really a function of just how important the sector is globally, how big it is, and how quickly technology and sophisticated operators are going to change this industry a lot faster than we could have expected.
Excellent, makes a lot of sense. That's all we have time for today. Tim, thanks again for joining us.
As always, Nina, thanks. Always great to talk to you and your audience.
Thanks for listening. If you like our show, please leave us a rating on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast. And make sure to subscribe so that you do not miss any episode. If you have any comments, questions, or suggestions, please email podcast@zacks.com.
This material is being provided for informational purposes only, and nothing herein constitutes investment, legal, accounting, or tax advice, or a recommendation to buy, sell, or hold a security. Do not act or rely upon the information and advice given in this podcast without seeking the services of competent and professional legal, tax, or accounting counsel. Publication and distribution of this podcast is not intended to create, and the information contained herein does not constitute, an attorney-client relationship. No recommendation or advice is being given as to whether any investment or strategy is suitable for a particular investor. It should not be assumed that any investments in securities, companies, sectors, or markets identified and described were or will be profitable. All information is current as of the date herein and is subject to change without notice. Any views or opinions expressed may not reflect those of Zacks Investment Research as a whole.